So the big question is this: what would you do if money didn't matter? Say you had millions in your bank account, what would you focus on? Would you spend more time with your family, with your wife, with your kids, take family vacations? Would you pursue your gifts and talents and dreams, serve your local community, teach others, serve your church community? You see, if what you would do if money didn't matter is pursue your gifts and talents and dreams to serve others, then that is probably what you should be doing. The problem is, most people are in the rat race, living 5 inches in front of their face with no time to pursue what they were born to do. That is the problem, and the solution is to develop enough passive income to replace your working income so you can quit your job and be free to live your life the way you were created to. That is the solution, and this podcast will show you how.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another awesome episode of Cashflow Dad Life. We have with us the privilege of talking to Mr. Josh Miller. He's in the Huntington Beach area of California, which is one of my favorite spots in the world. He has 3 kids, so he makes the the dad part of the Cashflow Dad Life. And he actually went from being an engineer for Chevron to, within 1 year, he was able to quit his job with passive income that he developed from single family rentals. His expertise is in marketing. He's going to share some of that with us and some of his story, some of the struggles that led him to where he is today. So welcome to the show, Josh Miller. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here.
Hey, thanks so much, Ryan. Excited to be here.
Thanks, man. Well, hey, let's dive right into it. So how did you, what was going on when you graduated college, you became an engineer? What were some of the things and the struggles that you had that made you want to try to transition into real estate?
I'd love to tell you how horrible my life was, but it really wasn't. I had an amazing job. I worked as an engineer for Chevron. I was able to travel the world and things were going great. I kept getting promotions. I kept, performing above my peers. But I was working like crazy. I was always a super hard worker. And I was just like, maybe I don't want to do this for the next 30 years. Maybe I don't want to spend my life at work. I'd rather spend my life with my kids. I'd rather spend my life with my family traveling. And I realized that, man, I didn't want to devote my life to a big corporation. So at that point, I was like, I need to get out of this. And I just started doing research on what can bring me passive income. And is like, every job out there, nothing compared. Everything kept coming back to real estate. So it was about 2016 when I was finally like discovered real estate. It took me a year and a half from then to actually quit my job. But that's how it all started.
Yeah. Real estate is, it's the industry that's made more millionaires than any other industry. And so it's attractive to a lot of people to get into it because of that. So your story is a little interesting because it's like you didn't have like these huge pain points.
No.
What were some things that you weren't able to do that you wanted to do, but your job was just kind of limiting you?
I think it's just like spending time with my family. So that was it. It's like I knew the big hitting point, there was a couple, but my mentor was a 70-year-old mechanical engineer. And he was still working at 70 because, the stock market had crashed or whatever in 2009 or whatever it was, 2008, and he had lost everything and he was still working. He finally retires at 72 and 6 months later he died. And that really was like one of the big wake ups was, he spent his whole life working. And to me, it was, I want to spend my whole life with my family. I want to spend my whole life traveling and enjoying life. And it's really hard to enjoy life when you're in front of a computer, 8 to 10 hours a day. So that's what I was really missing out on, was being home with my kids, going on bike ride. I biked my kids to school this morning. I mean, how cool is that?
Cool.
I'm going to pick them up at 2:30 on my bike. Like, I love it. So it's those type of things. It's those small things that I was really just like, I really wanted. And that's why I realized I needed to be an entrepreneur, and there's no better entrepreneur business than real estate. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, like the kids say these days, YOLO, you only live once. And, you know, if you're spending the majority of your life in front of a computer screen, and you were successful, you know, you had, you know, a good job. And but that realization from your mentor that, you know what, nothing is more secure than taking control of your own destiny and doing that through entrepreneurship and real estate as a channel of that entrepreneurship. So that's a really good testimony to that. So
yeah.
You wanted to move forward and you decided real estate. Mm-hmm. What strategy did you pick and how did you start?
So awesome. Yeah. So I did a lot of research on what the best strategy was. This was mid-2016 and I discovered pay-per-click, which is putting AdWords on Google. And I discovered wholetailing, which is purchasing a property and then closing on it and then selling it as is. So that's how I started. And I started just doing it in my local Los Angeles area. And then I started exploring and discovered some really cool secrets. One of which is if you could market across the country with your PPC ads, Google liked you a lot more and would lower your costs overall. So I hit pay dirt. I mean, it was incredible the success I had with that PPC for 6 months. and then all of a sudden after 6 months, everything kind of went crazy. It went really bad. I was buying homes all over the country, sight unseen. I would literally have these ads going across the country. I had in just a short 6 month period, I picked up a team of four people just handling the phone calls that would be coming in from all these leads. And then we would send an inspector out to the property. We'd send, get a BPO. Occasionally we'd get an appraisal done. We would purchase these homes, list them with a realtor. And, but then in the beginning of 2017, Google changed their algorithms and my leads went from, about $1.20 per lead to, I had a $20 budget for these specific areas. I wasn't getting any leads at that point because it just died. They just changed the algorithm. So it went from,
Rewind for just a second. How are you purchasing these homes? Did you develop enough cash base through your job that you were able to buy them in cash or how?
Not at all. So funny story, my first house I ever bought was, and looking back, I should never have bought this house. It was in like Waukesha, Wisconsin or some weird town like this. And I didn't want it, but the person was going to get foreclosed on. I think it was a foreclosure. They were going to lose their house to the city. Yeah. For back taxes. That's what it was. And they wanted, the house was probably worth 150. They kept saying, they wanted like 100. I was like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I can't do this. And they just kept knocking the price down. Then finally they call me up and they're like, if you give us $50,000, you can have the house. And I was like, well, all right. So I actually went on Bigger Pockets actually. And I was like, I need a hard money lender. And I just started emailing all these hard money lenders. And I found some guy who was like, yeah, I want 10%, 10 points basically. And I used his money, 100% financed. I bought it for 50 and then I sold it the next day because I had called a realtor up and the realtor's like, yeah, this house is definitely worth more than 50. You can go for it. And I think we sold it for like 85 the next day. And then he turned around and sold it for like 130 or something. Yeah, that was my first deal. Is 100% financed from a hard money lender I just happened to find. Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, what was your marketing message in your pay-per-click ads? And were you marketing all over the country or were you getting some deals in Huntington Beach?
No, I never got a single one in LA. I got them all over every state pretty much. And it was just what you see. If you go on a Google right now and type in sell my house, whatever you see on those first three, that's what my ads would say. So nothing special. The difference is If you're in like Huntington Beach and you're trying to hit that top three on PPC, you're probably spending $280 per click. So every time you click on that, that person's getting charged $280. Versus let's say you're in like Kansas City, and well, that's a big city too, but you're in some hunky-dory town in Wisconsin, that's only gonna cost you a dollar. And the trick I figured out with some maneuvering, which they closed, was I could advertise in every big city across the country and my clicks were only costing $1.20 versus the couple hundred that it should have been costing. So
well, that strategy doesn't work anymore?
It doesn't work anymore. One of the strategies that does work that I really like is that's still cheaper than what most people are doing is I will advertise in different, basically, it's a little confusing, but you know how direct mail works when you really want to get good responses? The best responses are always absentee owners. So who do you advertise? You don't advertise the people in your city. You send your direct mail out to the rest of the country. So the same thing with your PPC. You can geofence it so that you're actually advertising to the rest of the country and not your city. And so you're basically hitting all the out-of-state owners. That works a little bit. But there's new stuff that's coming out. Like I just heard about, you can target like title companies and title specific realtor offices and anybody who walks in there will now, it'll pop up on your phone and see your ad. So like that's, you know, the game's always changing. I think that's something that, you know, you just always have to be evolving and constantly improving your marketing because what worked 2 years ago doesn't work today.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take a brief break from the interview just to let you guys know at the end of this interview, I was so impressed with Josh and his marketing techniques, really new ninja real estate marketing techniques that he's had more success with than anybody else that I know. And so after the interview was over, I was, you know, basically twisting his arm and saying, hey man, can you please come do a mastermind with Cashflow Dad Life so that some of the people that are in the Cashflow Dad Life community can learn your ninja marketing techniques. And he agreed to do it. So we don't have it quite set up yet, but if you look at that link there, we're only gonna take about 12 people in the mastermind. We're gonna be doing it on a monthly basis. And so if you're interested in learning some of his techniques to learn from Josh personally, check out that link. It's www.cashflowdadlife.com/marketingmastery. And again, we are only taking 12 people. So if you're interested, there's no way to sign up or pay for it right now. We're just trying to gather as many people that are interested in starting it with him to just basically send us your email and say, hey, I'm interested when you guys get this rolling. So, all right, now back to the interview.
Yeah, you know, real estate, you know, I say it all the time, real estate is a marketing game. You know, if you can master the marketing for real estate, you get the lead flow, you get the deals, you can turn them over. So you were actually of the mindset of, all right, I'm going to get started in real estate. I'm just going to wholetail, right? Yep. I'm going to dominate PPC on Google.
Yep.
And if someone's searching, hey, I need to sell my house fast, you know.
Yep.
And you show up, they click on you and you have a conversation with them about, you know, and negotiate it.
Simple as that. Yeah. So I had two layers. They'd fill out a form or they would call. My first person would just qualify them. That's it. Just figure out whether or not they're a qualified lead. And then if they were, they'd be passed on to my acquisition manager. And my acquisition manager would negotiate, get the house under contract. We'd either docu-sign it or mail them out a contract. And that's it. And then we get the contract signed. And at that point, game on and do everything like everyone else.
Right. So that was more of active income. And you were successful in making that active income. Did you make a transition into passive income that gave you the comfortability to quit your job?
Yeah. So I would love to say like that all went great, but it didn't. So it went really good for 6 months, this PPC and wholetailing across the country. But then when in early 2017, when Google changed their algorithm, all of a sudden I wasn't getting any more leads. At the same time, I had a lot of homes that I had purchased that I was just turning around and trying to sell the next day. But unfortunately, a lot of these homes, not a lot, but there were a few that weren't selling. And I'd continued to use hard money on all these purchases because I was like, why use my own money when I could get others? So all of a sudden this money's due, these homes aren't selling. I don't have more homes coming in, and things got a little dicey for a little bit. And I didn't have a choice. I was like, okay, I need to change my mentality. And I always knew I wanted to get into rental properties. And so figured like, hey, now's a good time, almost by force. So in July of 2017, I started actually in February looking, and it took me until July. And then I found a market. I chose Omaha, Nebraska, never been there. The numbers looked good. I wanted good population growth, good job growth, good affordability rates, and not a lot of competition. I knew where all the competition was based on my PPC that I'd been doing. And so, yeah, chose Omaha and decided, like, I'm going to start building a rental portfolio. The way I did it, though, was I just did a lot of marketing, and I wanted to keep every home, but if the home didn't work, I would then say, okay, can we wholesale it? And if we couldn't wholesale it, we would wholesale it. And if we couldn't wholesale it, we would do a lease option or a fix and flip.
Okay.
So yeah. Yeah. And
how far away was that travel distance from you?
I only went twice. I think it's, I'd always go through Vegas, and yeah, I don't know. It's a couple hour flight, you know, 5-6 hours, something like that.
Yeah. So you had a team on the ground that would execute everything for you on the, well, I mean, I guess you just contact the broker and.
Yeah. So I had an acquisition team on the ground. So I had two guys going around buying homes, going, meeting with sellers, getting the homes under contract. I started up a property management company that failed miserably. We can get into that in a little bit. I had a construction crew that also failed miserably. We can talk about that. Yeah. We had, who else did we have on the ground? I had a cold caller on the ground, just somebody local. So it sounded, you know, and a lead manager on the ground.
Did you plan to finance the portfolio with hard money as well, or did you use different financing for that?
So majority of the rentals I wanted to own free and clear. So I would use my wholesale, fix and flip money to finance my rentals. So as much as possible, I was trying to buy my rentals free and clear. When needed though, I started with hard money, and then I went to national lenders. And then I was able to build up enough credibility with local banks that the local bank started lending to me as well. And that was amazing because nothing beats local banks. I mean, yeah, they were giving me fantastic rates. And as soon as you hit a limit with one bank, you just go to another local bank. And yeah, that worked out really well.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
You had enough portfolio and track record built up, and the local community banks are always the best lenders for local single family portfolios.
Yeah. And they want to lend to you. They just need to trust you, but they want to give you their money, and it's fantastic rate. So yeah, that was good.
So you seem like a real data driven guy, you know, like everything is based off of your Google and your PPC, and you did a lot of reverse engineering. Can you kind of go into, cause I'm kind of a numbers guy too. It's just, you know, part of me. I love it. I know it's real nerdy, but you know, it pays off sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Can you go into some of the KPIs? And for those of you who are listening that don't know what KPI is, it's your key performance indicators. Those are the numbers that you really want to monitor. What are the KPIs that you were looking at before you made a decision, like to go into Omaha, Nebraska, or before you made a decision to advertise in certain areas? What were those main metrics that you were using?
So you're talking about what did I use to choose Omaha?
Yeah, that would be a good example.
Okay, so I briefly mentioned it, but the big ones was I wanted to make sure that over the last 1 year, 5 year, 10 years, that there would have been population growth, because I didn't want, you know, it doesn't matter everything else. If the population's going down, you don't want to be there. I wanted to look at same thing for the 1, 5, 10 years. I wanted to look at the job growth. I wanted to see that, you know, things were steady as they go. And then
what did you use to project that?
I could look it up. This is all public info on the U.S. Census data. So it's all readily available just to pull and to track.
Just want to make sure it's trending upwards and.
Yeah. And then I wanted like just to beat the national average. So if it's dipping or zero, then it's no good. I found a lot of great markets that everything else looked good, but you know, their population kind of went like this and I just didn't buy it. And then affordability was a big one. You know, just making sure that the home prices compared to the income levels were okay. We're at a historically low mortgage rate. So making sure that, hey, if mortgage rates went up, then things would still work. John Burns, have you heard of that guy? He wrote the book Big Shifts Ahead, and it's like my favorite book ever. It's like it's all about the demographics of the United States, and it just inspired a lot of thinking. So if you check out that book and all the graphs and everything like that, because it just has a wealth of information.
So you kind of just like played on the population trends, growth trends, job trends, and then you know just the metrics of the supply and demand of the actual housing market in the area.
Yeah, then my population, I wanted, I started with at the metro side, so you can look up for the MSA for every single in the country, and then you figure out, okay, in that MSA, what county, then what city, and then what neighborhood do I want to be in? And there's a million things to look at. There's also like, if you're going to be wholesaling, hotelling, you want to look at the number of cash buyers in the area. This was back in 2017 that I ran all this. I'm trying to remember.
So now how many houses do you have in your portfolio now?
So have you read the story of the Mexican fisherman and the New York businessman?
I have, but go ahead and tell it for everybody who hasn't.
All right. Well, like in 10 seconds, it's essentially the story of this New York businessman goes down to Mexico and he finds his little village and he meets this Mexican fisherman who goes out every morning on his boat, catches a couple fish, comes back, cooks them up, serves it to the tourists, and then spends the rest of the day spending time with his family, playing guitar, and playing with his kids. So this New York businessman tastes the fish, and he's like, oh my God, these are the best fish ever. Why don't we go into business together? And the fisherman's like, okay. And the New York business is like, listen, all you have to do is we'll buy you a bunch more boats. You'll work 40, 50 hours a day, but it's okay because in 20 years we can sell your company. We can make millions. This is going to be the best thing ever. And then the fisherman's like, okay, then what? He's like, well, then you can just spend a couple hours in the morning doing what you like, fishing for a little bit, and you know, spend the afternoon playing guitar and spend time with your wife and playing with your kids. So that story always struck home to me is like, okay, so what do we need? You know, what do I need in life to really be happy? What is it that I really want? What am I after? And so I said from the beginning that I wanted 100 rentals. I wanted to meet a certain cash flow per month on each house. And once I reached that, I didn't care. I wasn't going to try to be huge. I wasn't going to try and, you know, get everything. So I have 100. That's what I hit in May of 2019. And then I retired.
Now you're driving on your bike.
Yeah. And I'm biking my 4-year-old, you know, we're biking along. It's fantastic. So, I my passion is really helping others. And so I am spending a lot of time, you know, trying to figure out, okay, what are the things that I really love to do and how can I help others? And I think, I don't know, maybe this is a theory of mine, but I think that's what everybody really wants. I think everybody really, at the end of the day, wants to help other people. Well, maybe not everybody, but most people. And getting to that point where you're realizing like, hey, it's not about getting rich or it's not about accumulating things, but it really is about how can I help others. That really does bring you the most amount of joy. So
yeah,
that's where I'm at.
You know, that's one of the key turning attitudes in my life was after I heard that quote from Albert Schweitzer, who said, this much I know, those of you who will really be happy will be the ones that have sought and found a way to serve other people. And that is quintessential to, I think, what you're saying. I think good-hearted people, yeah. I mean, you feel good when you put your head down on the pillow by helping other people. So
really, you know,
that's awesome. Yeah. That transition, yeah, to that. What are what's next for you now? So you're sitting down in Mexico playing guitar and giving yourself a fish. So you're happy with where you're at, but yeah, what are some things that you are now able to do that that kind of strikes on that chord?
Yeah, well, I think what brought me success, I made a million failures. Like, we could get into those, but if you don't have enough time. Like, I did everything wrong, basically, as far as hiring the wrong people. I was a horrible manager. I was a horrible at pretty much everything. But the one thing I did really good and allowed me to retire, even though everything else went wrong, was my marketing, because I did really good marketing. I was able to buy homes at, you know, 60 cents on the dollar, which is very forgiving, because if you're buying a $100,000 home for 60,000, then you have $40,000 to mess up, right? And it's hard to mess up that much. So I really do love marketing, and I'm working on just providing, writing everything out and just trying to provide as much of that for free, just to give out, just to give back. And, I always thought that was corny when I heard people say they want to give back, but it kind of makes sense. Like, unfortunately, I paid for a mentorship that did not go good at all. And I really want to encourage people to find good mentors and be able to recognize what a good mentor can do, because I think that would have helped me out tremendously. And like, I want to get to 10 years. So I figure I can start mentoring when I have been in real estate 10 years. That's like my thing is, I would love to be a mentor, but I'm waiting till I'm done at 10 years. Yeah, because I think there's so much wisdom. There's so much wisdom that I don't have. And all I know is marketing. And so I would like to be able to share my marketing and spend my time doing my marketing right now, giving all I can there, and encouraging other people to find people who have been in the business 10 years or longer and go that track. But yeah, so that's what I'm doing. So I'm just writing and you can see this is a green screen because I'm making videos all day that I'm just going to be posting on YouTube on marketing.
Awesome. So you're at 100.
Yeah.
Now what's the grand total between, I know it's probably loose in your head, but how many houses have you closed on since you decided to start this back in 2017, between the rentals and the hotels and the flips?
I don't know. We did 210 in 2018.
Okay.
I don't know how many we did. I'd have to look up. I know that number though. Yeah. I know it's well north at 300.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all marketing. So do you mind if I just talk a little bit about that? That's what I love.
Yeah, let's go. Give us all your nuggets of wisdom when it comes to
that. All right. Awesome. So the trick with marketing is to always be changing and always figuring out what's working and what's not. Because direct mail, or like I started with PPC and it worked amazing. And then I switched to direct mail and I started seeing some slow responses. So then I switched to cold calling and I started seeing some slow responses. Then I switched to voicemail drops and then I switched to text messaging. So I think it's always changing. So staying ahead of what's working is super key. And then I also think never just do one thing. So right now, or at least when I ended, the way I did it was I would send a text message out, because that's the cheapest, right? You can send text messages for less than a penny. You send a text message out. If you don't get a response, I would send a voicemail drop. If I didn't get a response, I would send a cold call for the highly motivated people. If I didn't get a response, I would send direct mail. So I love direct mail. I think direct mail 100% works, but it's being smart about your marketing and not just blasting everybody anymore, but it's trying to really be as specific as you can with your messages. So along those lines, I really try to divvy up my list. So instead of just sending the same postcard to everybody, and I had specific marketing messages for if somebody was going through a pre-foreclosure versus if somebody is a tired landlord. It's probably too hard to start doing all that, but at least at the beginning, having two sets of marketing, one for people in financial distress. So you would hit key messages like, just how can we help, versus like the tired landlord, the absentee owner is more of like, tired of that. But all the pain points. Yeah. That we're so familiar with. Yeah. So that's it in like 5 seconds, but the key point I think is just don't be stuck in one thing. And if one thing isn't working, switch it up a little bit, switch up your messaging and figure out, but consistency is obviously the key thing. Most of our deals would come 6 months later, from just constantly, they didn't respond to our text. They didn't respond to our voicemail. They didn't respond to our email. And then finally they responded to, our direct mail. And then, another thing that worked really, really well is we would send out a letter of intent. So it would be an actual three options on this letter with a cash price and then two finance options. And we would send that out in masses and we would get a lot of responses. I think we purchased somewhere 52 homes or something like that in 2018, just from that letter.
So once again, guys, you know, like, as I said in the beginning, I was really impressed with Josh and his marketing skills. If you'd like the opportunity to potentially work in his mastermind with him and to learn his marketing techniques, exactly how to do them, strongly encourage you, before it fills up, we're only going to take 12, go to www.cashflowdadlife.com/marketingmastery. And listen, we talk about a lot of strategies on the show. Josh is talking about wholetailing. My book is called The 7-Day Real Estate Survival Blueprint. It talks about two strategies, wholesaling and sandwich lease options. You can apply a lot of what Josh is saying in the marketing to some of the stuff that we execute in the book. And it's a 7-day plan. You can get it at cashflowdadlife.com/7. All right, back to the interview.
Those are some incredible gems of wisdom. It's all in the details too of the marketing. Like, you know, most people understand that they should market, but knowing and understanding the exact process, knowing the things that you need to measure, the messages that work and don't work, split testing those messages. I mean, that's all. It's actually, you know, a lot of people think you're just kind of throwing darts on a board, and you are somewhat, but there is a science to it in evaluating what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And measuring, like at the end of the day, like the key thing you got to be measuring is how much are you spending on marketing versus how much you're making on that deal. Cause you can easily spend in some of these hot markets, $10,000 on marketing, but if you're only making $10,000 on the deal, you just wasted a whole lot of time. So making sure that your marketing dollars are being tracked so that you can see, okay, at the end of the day, if you don't track anything else, just track that one number.
That's excellent. Now, how many, if someone is just getting started, what would you recommend that they budget for marketing?
It really would depend on the market that you're in. So if you're in like a super, super hot market, and I mean, it really depends, but I just an average, I would say around $1,200, per deal. So expect to spend $1,200 per deal and, don't expect it the first month. So, you know, it's going to take probably 3 months to get your first deal. So, you know, what is that? $3,600, just to get your first deal. Now you could get six deals for that, but I would say as a minimum, if you're just starting out and you don't have $3,600, I would say $3,600.
Awesome. Yeah. Give me some of the other nerdy stats that I love. Like how many people are you talking to? How many of those actually go to the closing table? How many offers are you making a week? How many people do you talk to make those offers, and how many go to the closing table?
Yeah. So our acquisition guys close 1 in 4 appointments. So we're really, really pushing the appointments. I think this is another thing people often do is they try to push the close. So they go from talking to somebody to trying to close the deal versus something that really helped us was trying to push to get an appointment to go to the property. And then once we were there, then it was like, okay, now we can talk about closing the deal. So we would never even try to, we would qualify them over the phone. But anyway, so yeah, we would close 1 in 4 properties. And then 1 in 20, it averaged between there of qualified leads. So people that said, yeah, I have a house to sell and their numbers actually worked. Would we actually go out on an appointment and be able to close those? Now, as far as how many leads would it take to get those 20 qualified leads, it really depended on how you're marketing. So if you're text messaging them, and so this is where it gets crazy. So it all comes down to your list. Like nothing matters more than your list. And I think that's something that people will spend all this money on direct mail, but they won't spend the money on their list. And nothing matters more than your list, because if you're buying a list that everybody else has, you're going to get the same results that most people get, which is crickets. So, you know, spending your money and spending your time figuring out, okay, where can I get a list? And the best list by far is driving for dollars. And that is just either you doing it or paying somebody to drive around or having connections. But so as far as your numbers go of how many leads do you need in order to get the 20 that would be qualified, it really would depend on, are your leads coming from PPC, in which they're almost all good leads, so it's almost like 1-to-1, versus your text messaging. We get a 40% response rate to our text messages. So 40% of the people that we text us back. But are those leads? Not really, because most of them are, you know, profanity. But, you know, so it's hard to put a number to that. But I going back to what I was just talking about, getting your good list, if you're going to spend some money, spend it on figuring out how to get a really, really good list.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure that, man, if I had 12 hours, I'd love to just sit and pick your brain for 12 hours. And thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing amazing wealth of information. It's like drinking water from a fire hose when you get in front of somebody that has as much success as you. And it's just awesome to soak it in. So I hope the listeners got a ton of value out of this. I have a feeling this isn't the last time we're going to see Joshua Miller. And thank you so much, man, for coming on the show. Before we go, one last grain of wisdom that you can drop on us. Like if you're just getting started in real estate, what is the number one piece of advice you would give?
So it's going to sound, maybe I should say two, a real estate one, but I think the most valuable thing, like the thing, if you don't have this, you're guaranteed not to succeed. And that is, you need to have a purpose. You need to have a why. You need to have something, a reason that you are going to be working your butt off, and a reason why you're going to be going to succeed. Because I really do think that the people that have a purpose and have a good reason. So if it's just to accumulate wealth, you're probably going to get burnt out. But I would just say that is get super crystal clear on why, what you're going after. And if you have that, then you can pretty much accomplish anything.
That is an amazing piece of advice. We call it the why that makes you cry. If you've got a deep
purpose, there you go.
If you've got a deep purpose, then the money tends to follow the purpose. You know, a lot of times people make the mistake. They get the rose colored glasses on and they start seeing the money and they're like, oh, you know, this is amazing. I'm making tons of money, which you can, but, you're going to have problems. You're going to have hiccups, and we didn't get into, you know, some of the failures and things that you did wrong. And if you don't absolutely love your purpose and what you're doing to get to that purpose, then you're not going to succeed. You're not going to have the motivation. So That is
absolutely.
Yep. That is. I wasn't expecting that piece of advice, but I love that. So thanks
cool,
so much again, Joshua, for coming on the show and sharing all of your passion and your wisdom with us.
I don't know about wisdom, but I will definitely share my passion. I really appreciate you having me on, Ryan. Thanks a lot. Experience. There you go.
All right. Take it easy.
Boom. Thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You're going to want to listen to every episode as soon as it comes out, because each episode has an idea or a strategy that could literally change your life. And listen, don't miss out on the free investor tools that I have for you on my website, cashflowdadlife.com. So go to cashflowdadlife.com and get your free swag. And listen, hit me up if you want to talk about how we can get you out of the rat race as soon as possible. Until next time, my name is Ryan Anke, and this was Cashflow Dad Life.